Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, love you, love you, love you. This is another great podcast. We've got Mike Murphy from Colgate in his second go-around with us. Man, we cover a lot of stuff. Spend some time on less is more. It's kind of interesting dialogue on practice philosophies. Get a bunch of drills. In addition to ones we've talked about in the past, you get the dolphin drill. We get the beast drill, which is one I think I'm going to write about. Again, got to say special thanks to our good friends at Crossover for sponsoring this podcast. This is a great product. You need to check it out. I use it. I love it. More and more people are talking about it. It's all the buzz. Save yourself some money and get a great product for breaking down your film. Coach Murphy's an interesting guy. You know, he's had great success there at Colgate, and we get a little better insight into his personality and some things that work. Again, premium guys, love you to death. Thank you for everything. Without further ado, Coach Mike Murphy, Colgate.
Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, we love you to death. Special thanks to our friends at Crossover, and special thanks to Coach Mike Murphy from Colgate coming back on today. Coach, welcome back.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I've had the opportunity to see Coach at some summer tournaments, and he was even gracious, came over and talked to our teams a couple of times. Yeah, all that stuff we talked about in the last podcast, which I think was a couple years ago now, man, you know, on you being such a great guy still resonates through.
Well, I appreciate that. That's awful nice of you to say.
Well, that's the last nice thing I'm going to say to you. Man, so let's let it rip. Hey, Coach, I want to, I listened to the previous podcast, and I went, as I encourage our listeners to, yeah, we spent a lot of time there on the dragon drill and the Omaha drill, which was the one we wrote up in the practice. But you know, we really didn't get into the practice plan in any great detail. You talked about coming out in, and I understand fall's different, you know, and depending on who you're preparing for is different. But in kind of a general macro sense, you know, you came out and you did some stick work, and then the kids went into the stretching. You were big on those nugget drills, you know, which I think high school coaches are finally starting to buy into, you know, doing a lot more of those knockdown drills. And then you went into some kind of transition. Is that still kind of the general format for the first half hour, 45 minutes of the practice?
Yeah, it was interesting, Mike. You know, when we exchanged emails last week, I went back and looked at all of our 2015 practice plans. And, you know, what we really tried to do over this past year was kind of the MO of, you know, sometimes less is more. And throughout the course of the fall, we really looked at trying to have hour and a half practices, and then really even in the spring tried to get to that so we were fresh, you know, during games. And that's kind of our staple, you know, is you get in there, you get the kids in warmed up, 5 minutes of stick work lines, and then they meet with our athletic trainer to get stretched out, and then you could jump into some other stick work drill. But again, we do a lot of things full field. Again, the game is played, you know, so fast with the rule changes and, you know, quick whistles and those kind of things. And we've really tried to emphasize that with our own guys. And, you know, the dragon drill is one of our favorites. It was funny you mentioned that one. Again, some full field shooting, as well as unsettled play. And we could talk about that one a little bit if you'd like. But again, it's unsettled for us. It's unsettled. It's transition. It's playing the game when it's not a 6-on-6 scenario, because those scenarios are just seem to be getting farther and few between.
Yeah, and you know, you raised a couple of points I want to come back to. You know, it was really funny. Matty Kerwick is a great friend of the site, you know, and really got to know him when he was at Jacksonville. And with the heat in Jacksonville, he just felt like he needed to limit his practice to 80 or 90 minutes. You know,
I
wasn't sure you were still there. And then he just kind of adopted it, you know, when he kind of fell in love with that philosophy. And I wouldn't say a lot, Coach, but I'll say, you know, 10 or 15% of the coaches that we've talked to in the last 2 years have dropped the practice times down for the exact same reason.
It was interesting, and I read an article from Chip Kelly, you know, and he was talking about when he was at Oregon, and then obviously when you're in the NFL, your time is very, you know, it's very mandated on what you can do. And if you look at it in terms of, you know, the academic reputation of a place like Colgate and all the different you know, variables your kids go through in a given day, it really seemed to work out well for us. And I just kind of felt, you know, in our middle two seasons, in 2013 and 2014, you know, we really got tired down the stretch. And I don't know that we were playing our best lacrosse. Where we kind of went back to the 2012 season, and then as we got ready for the 2015 season, and we just said, you know what, as you talk micro and macro, we need to, you know, we need to be more efficient at practice. And, you know, can a 10-minute drill become an 8-minute drill, along those lines? And we really found ways to, you know, limit some wasted time, and get the guys in and out of drills quicker, limit some drills, maybe move some drills to a, you know, a Tuesday as opposed to doing them on a Monday. So it just became, again, more of just trying to be efficient at practice and making sure that that time was well spent. And between the weight room and our conditioning, we really did a good job of it. And I really thought we were playing some great lacrosse there at the end of the 2015 season.
You definitely were playing great lacrosse at the end of the 2015 season. You know, in order to really pull this off, you know, it requires, you know, I think a real dedication to the practice planning. And I know you do kind of a macro plan and then, you know, for the week, and then you come back down the night before and plan, after looking at the film or talking to the other coaches, you know, put your practice plan together for the next day. And I think, you know, high school coaches, after 5 years, you know, the message is finally starting to get through to them. The, you know, the real success is in the planning of practice, you know. And changing the, you know, there's, I think, Brody Merrill told me on our site, we have like 32 ways to run 3v2. I mean, whether it's a crunch drill brought in 3v2 or even a full field or the drill you run at 5v4 or even a 70-yard 3v2. You know, there's so many things you can do with 3v2 and 4v3 to emulate those little snapshots of transition that you described earlier. Keeping it interesting and using different drills to feature different scenarios. You know, I hesitate to say, you know, game time scenarios, though they really are, you know, kind of in transition moments.
It's funny you say that. You know, when I was going through, you know, what you and I wanted to talk about today, I wrote down a bunch of different things, and I kept coming back to that. A couple different things that we do, you know, situational scrimmages. We run a ride clear scrimmage to kind of get us up and moving real quick. But to kind of go back to what you talked about earlier, yeah, we continue to do that. It was something that I learned, you know, going on, it seems like a million years ago from Jack Emmer at Army, is, you know, my staff and I sit down on Sunday night, and we do a macro level of what Monday through Friday are going to look like in terms of big picture stuff, transition, unsettled, and then come back, and as you look at that macro from Monday, and they're just, you know, just titles. We're going to do something unsettled. We're going to do something 6-on-6. We're going to do something riding clear. And then you come back to that Monday morning and you're saying, okay, well, Monday we're talking about doing 6-on-6 or full field. What drill are we going to do? And you kind of go into your bag of tricks and you look to say, all right, well, what do we need to do this week? Maybe, you know, you're getting ready for Army or you're getting ready for Navy and they do something in particular from watching the film. But before you get into them, say, Tuesday, Wednesday, what can we do on Monday to get our guys thinking about those guys without really thinking about Army and Navy? You're really thinking about yourself.
Yeah, because Monday was your us day, right?
Yeah, Monday continues to be our us day, and we really focus on getting...
You had a better word for it than that, I know.
No, it really, it's kind of keep it simple, stupid there. It's about us on Mondays. And it was, you know, you have nothing to do with your opponent in terms of what your guys may see, but you're thinking about, you know, if it's Loyola, whoever it may be, you know, maybe you're playing Bucknell that week and they've been known for their 10-man rides. So, you know, you're going to do something with your guys to bring that to their attention, but they don't know, let's be honest, our kids aren't dumb. They know if we're doing, you know, clear versus seven or some kind of pressure clearing drill, and they know Bucknell's at the end of the week, they know exactly what's going on without saying, you know, we're getting ready for Bucknell and their 10-man ride.
Sure. Hey, can I go a different direction here for a second?
Sure,
and ask
love
you
it.
Kind of an awkward question.
You can ask away. I may not answer it.
No, I've really come to enjoy our relationship, man, and you're the best, and you nailed me on that email. I don't know what I was doing, cutting and pasting wrong. But anyway, man, I was looking at the stats, Coach, and I saw this 29.9 shots per game.
Uh-huh.
And it just seemed exceptionally low for you and your style of play, once again, predicated on your style of practice. You know, your whole practice is up and down. You probably run, and maybe I'm out of line here, but I think you run probably less 4v4, less 6v6, less half-field drills than many, many of the coaches that we talk to. And you can't argue with your success in the 4 or 5 years, you know. But at the end of the day, were you surprised by that 30 shots a game? Was that by design? I just expected it to be 5 or 6 shots more per game.
No, I think, Mike, you know, as you look at our club, and especially last year, we were just really efficient on offense. And you look at it, it was, you know, 30-some-odd shots a game, and we were still scoring, you know, some pretty good numbers. And where we kind of started to slow the game down a little bit for us was, you know, unfortunately for us, our first practice in January when we were getting ready for the season, we lost our faceoff guy, and Alex Keneally was a preseason all kind of conference guy, all American guy, you know, one of the top 10 faceoff guys in the country, and he went down, he ruptured his Achilles tendon, and we had to kind of change the way that we did things and had to be a little bit more efficient on offense because, again, we didn't want to take, you know, some shots and maybe not see the ball again. And even though the faceoff rules changed, I think the dominant guys were still dominant. But we really worked at, you know, trying to play the game as fast as we could. If we couldn't get anything, you know, that what we thought was high efficiency in those first, you know, couple seconds of a possession, then it was, you know, we're going to settle it down, get our guys on the field and work the ball around. You know, I think if you squint at the stats and you look at, you know, just the Patriot League championship game, you know, or the Patriot League weekend for us, we shot the ball at over 60%, you know, against two very good defenses in Bucknell and Army. And, you know, we scored a bunch against Bucknell, didn't score as many against Army, but we scored when we needed to. And I think that it goes back to the old adage is you want to play fast, but you don't want to play in a hurry.
Yeah, and that makes, you know, God, you just said so much there, didn't you? The face-off percentage was, you know, not where you're
awful.
Used to having it be. It was under 40.
Let's call a spade a spade. It was awful.
I'm trying to be nice, man. We're just 15
okay.
minutes into the interview. Lighten up. Yeah.
You don't have to sugarcoat it. I know our guys are, you know, they're pretty fired up as we come back in for getting ready for 2016. I know Peter Marchetto, you know, he feels like that, you know, that 0.38 is not who he is. But as you look at it, you know, it was, as you prepare for any season, you know, it's, you're never preparing for injuries, but you're always trying to get your guys ready to go. But as we looked at it over the course of our short time here at Colgate, we've had some really good face-off guys and we've been able to develop some guys. And, you know, unfortunately for Peter, it was one of those next man up scenarios and he had to come ready. And I think he had a good start of the season for himself, but he sustained a pretty significant ankle injury and midway through the year, and that really affected him to kind of, you know, drive off that inside foot of his. So, you know, it was what it was. We got to be better on the wings, and I think we're going to be there as we get into the 2016 season. But, you know, as most coaches say, you know, the stats can't lie when you know, when they were that poor. So we got to be better at it. We've addressed some of those things in recruiting as well as the development of our own players moving forward.
Well, and there's a tremendous lesson to learn there, man. I mean, I tip my hat to you with the success that you had, and I think a lot of us that, you know, at the core consider ourselves you know, balls to the wall transition coaches. I mean, let's get it up and down. Let's take those high volume shots at the same time focusing on shot percentage and making sure we get those shots on cage. And, you know, here you are. I mean, clearly a disciple of that style of lacrosse, that due to the personnel that you had available, you had to shift philosophy just a tad. I mean, not a lot, but just a tad. And I think high school coaches and a lot of travel coaches, you know, their reputation is based on XYZ style of play, and they're going to play XYZ style of play, you know, regardless of what their personnel is.
And the other thing I think that can be misleading with, you know, shots and those kind of things is, you know, we wanted to be a higher percentage shooting team. It's as opposed to, right, you know, getting to 50 shots and shooting at 20%. Well, great, you got it to 50 shots, but you're a terrible shooting team. Where, you know, as you look at us, you know, our shooting percentage as a whole was in and around 35%, but our shots on goal were upwards in the 60s. And so you're getting those shots on goal, and you're scoring as much as we were with that high percentage. It doesn't matter how many shots you're getting. You're limiting your opponent, you know, to 25%, and then closer to 50% on shots on goal. You know, you're playing some good defense. You're getting some good goaltending, but more importantly, you're just being efficient on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, 0.635 on the shots on goal percentage, which, you know, any coach would love to have. I mean, you'd love to have more, but, I mean, realistically, that's at the high end.
Yeah.
You know, no doubt about it. All right, so, Coach, let's go back to that practice plan. Now we're in that push-the-tempo transition segment you come in with right away?
We do. It's just, I think, the middle part of practice as you get into it, where your guys are – you know, they've just gotten out of class. Why not, you know, kind of get up there and let them play a little bit with their hair on fire, have some fun with it, in terms of whether it's, again, our last touch drill. We talked about Omaha last time out, you know, our Apache ground ball drill, you know, all the different things that we do to try to get up and down and have the boys, you know, enjoying what they're doing after maybe a tough day of classes or whatnot. It allows us, again, to play the game in its, you know, the way that it was be meant to be played. And then from there, you kind of get down into your six-on-six. You're settled. Maybe your individuals with your guys. The attack is going to shoot. You know, attacking middies are going to shoot. Defense is doing, you know, footwork. Goalies are working on their, you know, their positionings and those kind of things. But I think that middle part of practice, you know, you want to get out there and you want to let your guys run.
Well, and the players love it.
I think so, too. I think so too, because again, you know, you've been sitting in class all day. The last thing you want to do is sit down and be overly talked at in practice. And I think again, you know, whether it's a ride clear scrimmage or sometimes coming out of before we even get into anything, I'll blow the whistle and we'll play an overtime scrimmage. We'll put 4 minutes on the scoreboard and let the boys just get out there and play.
No, I love it, man. I love it. And it's very similar to the way I try and structure my practices too. You know, we track touches, you know, and I think, you know, we try and get every player 200 touches in the first hour and 300 touches in a 90 minute period or an hour and 45 minute period, depending on, you know, whether it's travel ball or high school varsity or whatever it turns out to be. Coach, in all the dialogue that we've had, we haven't really talked about any 4v4 work, or I know coaches have different words for it. You know, on our website, we call it crunching the field,
mm-hmm.
You know, where we're putting the cones down in maybe 15-yard block segments or rectangles and making the kids play 3v2 front to back in a confined area. You know, love a drill we got from Coach Bates where it kind of toggles back and forth, you know, on the right-hand side of the cage, left-hand side of the cage, right-hand side of the cage. And then we had an interesting drill from Steve Colfer from Cabrini where he actually puts cones on the hash marks, you know, up through about 15 yards high of the cage and focuses on that, what he defines as time and space or time and room, but, you know, they have to play 3v2 in that confined area. Are you doing that kind of stuff too, Coach?
We do. Actually, interesting enough, down the stretch, we got pretty proficient at playing some zone defense. And in order to practice that, we did a lot of what we call as 3v2 up the side. And you have your five lines at the restraining line, in between the restraining line and the sideline. And then what I would do is I would stand directly in the middle of the cage, and they couldn't go past me. So you had to play on one half of the field, probably similar to the drill that Coach Bates talked with you about, and we actually ended up doing it with tennis balls to give our offensive players, you know, having to have great handle with the tennis ball, and it's a little lighter in your stick, a little easier on the goalie's body because you're playing in that tight scenario, asking defensemen to get into passing lanes and knocking balls down. And instead of, you know, when you play in that 10 to 15 yard, that little box right there, we were just, you know, worried about injuries and those kind of things. So we grabbed the tennis balls, and again, we don't let them go, you know, past the middle of the cage. If you were to draw a line straight down the right. middle of the cage, and in that little, you know, 5 to 10 yard box, and the defensemen, those two defensemen are trying to hold as best they can while playing those three players, and those three guys trying to understand what's happening when those D-men are trying to slow play them. And that's one of our favorites, you know, especially at the tail end of the year when we were going to that zone. It was helping those guys that, you know, in our 3-3 zone understand, you know, the top third or the top half of it and the bottom half of it, as well as our offensive guys understanding how to drag and create some space in a tight space. And that's kind of what we've done 3v2. Another drill that we do that I learned from Mike Caravana at Denison, where I'm sure everybody does it, is we call it basketball. And you've got, you know, you move the cages to the restraining line, the top of the restraining line, and you go restraining line to restraining line, and everybody's on offense and everybody's on defense. And the last guy who, you know, you send three guys up on offense and they're being defended by two guys that are in a, you know, that traditional I formation, and they're just playing lacrosse. And it's, you know, you got to move the ball and really work on what we call, you know, you got to work for the dunk. I want to see guys getting shots off on the doorstep as opposed to, you know, taking 8 to 10 yard shots. And you're working your stick work, you're working getting the ball out of your stick. Again, in that 30-yard, that area from, you know, or 40-yard area, I should say, from restrainer to restrainer. And that's another great, you know, 3v2 drill that we do. So we talked two 3v2 drills right there. And then you mentioned 4-on-4. And we took an interesting approach to the 4-on-4 drill. And we do it in a full field setting, with two teams, and I got it a couple years ago from watching Hard Knocks, you know, the football show that they do on HBO. Yeah. Watching the Miami Dolphins do their input drills or their install drills, excuse me. And they had the one group on one side, so maybe you had the starters on one side. And then, or the, you know, the starting offense versus the secondary defense and vice versa on the other side. And the coaches were literally standing in the middle. So you'd blow the whistle and the middies, let's just say the middies on the left side, they would start. They would run their 4-on-4. They would do whatever. You'd blow the whistle, you flip sides. And the middies on the right side, they go. And then they do whatever they do. Then you blow the whistle and then the attack on the left side, they do their thing. So you keep going back and forth. There's no wasted time. Again, early in the broadcast, we talked about the efficiency of practice. And again, you're able to get, you know, four reps in about a minute if you're doing it correctly and your guys are working on getting to the goal. And you just, and then as you go to the right side for the attack, for the second group of attackmen to go, that left side, they're already rotating their guys out. So your assistants or your staff are rotating, you know, the next group of 4-on-4 on while the other group is going on. So then you turn around and you're ready to go to the next rep. Again, making it efficient, making it not a lot of downtime for your guys. They've got to be ready to win the whistle. So as soon as I turn around to blow the whistle, they're ready to play.
So, Coach, on each rep, you've got four new on offense and four new on defense?
No, let's look, if we start the drill, so we've got two sets of 4-on-4, one on the left, one on the right. You blow the whistle in the midfield group on the left side, they go. So let's just say those are your top middies are gonna go. You blow the whistle, they do their rep. Ball is shot, it's scored, whatever. You blow the whistle, you turn around, and then the middies on the right hand side, they go. Whatever happens, happens. You turn around, and then the attack on that left-hand side, they're ready to go. They're attacking the cage, the cage from behind. Whatever happens, turnover, goal, shot. you blow the whistle, then you go to the you go back over to the right hand side, and you're going. So now the attack is doing their rep down there. While that's going on, you've gone through all both groups on the left hand side. A new group of four is coming on while the first, you know, the first group is done, and so you just keep going back and forth.
So that's almost like a toggle too, right and then left,
yep.
And right and then left.
Yeah, you could probably look at it that way as well. Yes.
Well, it's just terminology we use on our site. Yeah. Very cool. And that runs really fast too.
Yep, we can get, you know, we get a lot of touches in that 8-minute segment. Like I said, if we're getting four, you know, four reps in a minute, you know, and you're going to do it for 8 minutes or you go a little bit longer, you're getting a lot of touches. There's not a lot of downtime, cause you've split, you know, you split your group up evenly. Maybe in the 4-on-4 drill, you've taken your, you know, your face-off guys and they're doing, you know, their stuff. So you're really, concentrating on, you know, your O-middies, your D-middies, your attack and your defense, as well as getting those O-middies some defensive touches, as well as getting your D-middies to play a little bit in the 2-on-2. You know, we'll get it because we want our D-middies to play in transition and have some good offensive feel to them. You may just definitely put those guys in that situation, and you may just kind of adjust the way that you do it, that the 2-on-2 might not be, you know, two midfielders. It may be an attack and a midfielder. So instead of making an east-west pick, maybe you're making a, you know, what we refer to as a rock pick, as you're going down from midi to attack, and you're trying to work a matchup that way, or you play a little two-man game on the side in terms of it. So the Dolphin drill allows us, again, to get a lot of touches in, a lot of coaching in, because, again, you can coach the group. If you're the offensive coach and something happened, you know, poorly on offense on the left side, you might be with that group to talk to those guys a little bit, and we've got another group going while, you know, the coaches are going on, that little on-field coaching part is going on, and then we're able to, you know, turn it around pretty quickly.
So, Coach, what constitutes the end of a rep? I mean, are you just limiting this to 15 or 20 seconds and then bang, the whistle blows, or?
Yeah, I don't usually let an offensive possession last any more than 30 seconds. So if they're kind of, you know,
right,
dilly-dallying with the ball, I'm going to start, you know, making a 10 count. And I start going 10, 9, and they know that if you hear Coach Murphy kind of making that countdown, we got to attack the goal. And then it's, you know, a rep is over, either when I blow the whistle if we're not doing anything, or the defense might just have played really good defense at that point. But the ball goes in, there's a turnover, you know, shot out of bounds, the defenseman gets a nice poke and the ball goes sailing out of bounds, and then I'll blow the whistle and I'll start to walk down to the other end.
Yeah, so if the defense gets whatever the definition is, I'm just going to use the word a stop right now. That's
yeah.
The end of a rep too.
Correct. And we refer to that as our 4-on-4 Dolphin drill.
I like it, man. I like it a lot. Very cool.
It just gets you, as you said, and I'm sure a lot of the coaches that you've talked to on your site, it gets you some, you know, to use it a little bit of a soccer term, you know, some short-sided stuff to get your guys playing in those, you know, those fractions of their, you know, that part of the offense, you know, the two guys up top. Maybe it's the two guys on the side. A lot of times, you know, in the Dolphin drill, we'll tell them, all right, we want 4-on-4 in a box. So there's two behind and there's two up top. Or we may say we're going to do 4-on-4 in a Y, where you've got two up top, one in the middle, and one behind. So they've got to play off each other that way. Now, the play may be, you know, dictated at the midfield, but as those guys are driving down the side or they're running their, you know, their third of the offense, there should be some movement going on underneath with those attackmen. So they're creating space. They're running, you know, their third of their half of the drill as well. That, you know, they're setting a pick for one another just to get those defensemen so they're not just standing around.
Coach, you run that drill where the poles play offense too? Just mix the whole team up, divided by two.
We don't do that in Dolphin. We'll do it a lot more in 3v2 basketball, where we'll let the, you know, the poles will play a lot more offense in that drill. The Dolphin drill is a lot more, you know, probably, you know, to use a poor word, a little bit more rigid in terms of offense and defense of what you're doing.
Well, and your word to basketball drill, which, you know, everybody runs like three or four. I think we've got like four or five different ways to run that drill.
Yeah. Yeah, so the guys like to do that, and then we also have
a carry in there. It's a little more realistic if they're coming down in a game, and it emulates a game scenario.
Absolutely, and the same thing we do with like our ride clear scrimmage is, you know, it might be a 30-second. You start the whistle with 30 seconds or 25 seconds for an offensive possession, and any time the ball is either shot out of bounds or a goal is scored or whatnot, you know, you're picking it up out of the goal or you're picking it up off the end line and you're clearing it. There's no, you know, you didn't back it up. So any shot is really a turnover if it doesn't go in the goal. But if it goes in the goal, you're clearing it. So that gets your guys thinking fast, gives your poles a chance to pick up the ball quickly and get it up the field. And that's what we do with our ride clear scrimmages a lot of times is, you know, there's a lot more stick handling for the long poles in those drills. Or, you know, we talked about, you know, the Omaha drill that we do with our face-off guys. There's a lot of ground ball play there that allows those defensemen to have the ball in their stick because I think it's important. You want those guys to have a comfort level with it. And we've had some pretty good stick handling defensemen in our short time here at Colgate.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, you know, December is a hard time to get coaches, Coach. And so I usually take the... We do like David Letterman top 10 countdown in December.
Uh-huh.
And we take the 10 most viewed drills over the previous 12 months off of page views on our website, you know.
Okay.
And, yeah, I'm, you know, I'd have to go back and look, but I'm 99% sure the Omaha drill made the cut. It was very, very popular on the drill. And the cool thing was that if you didn't have full rosters, you know, you could run that with two attackmen and two defense. And still focus on those ground balls on wing play and get that transition look and the last touch and all that stuff was really, really good stuff.
Yeah, I know there's two coaches that love the Omaha drill and Coach Alberisi and myself, so hopefully those folks that follow Army and Colgate did some voting for you to get us into that top 10.
Yeah, you want to talk about a guy that's anal on practice planning, Alberisi, I put him at the top of the list. I think he's got it done in September, doesn't he?
Oh, well, I've learned from the best. You know, when you talk about Mike Caravana, Jack Emmer, and Joe Alberisi, we've already, you know, I've already started to think about our own practice plans for the fall of 2015, getting ready for, you know, the spring of 2016. So, again, I learned from some guys that are, you know, efficiency is a big word in off of my coaching tree.
Well, and, you know, I want to get back to lacrosse. This interview is flying by. But one of the things I've learned, you know, that's really, really interesting to me is that I think we have a tendency to think of head coaches as, and I hope I can verbalize this, head coaches as passionate, charismatic guys that understand lacrosse and are great leaders of young men. And I think more and more, you know, the great coaches are teachers, you know, as well as just like rah-rah guys or like you might on first reaction think of guys like Petromala or Tierney, you know. I mean, but really over 5 or 6 years of doing these interviews, I'm amazed at how analytical the great head coaches are, you know. And again, I put Alberisi at the top of the list. You know, just in their attention to detail and the practice planning and how well organized and set they are. You know, it's really kind of funny when Coach Sowell went to Navy, you know, at Stony Brook, he always had like, 32-man rosters was kind of his mantra, you know, or his style. And then he went to Navy, you know, and they got like a 70-man roster and he had two practice fields and 65 million assistant coaches and 2,000 trainers. And, you know, we interviewed him after the first week. And he's a good friend of the site, and he's going, I got to figure out what to do with all these people, you know?
Well, I just think, you know,
but the organization is so key.
Yeah, from Coach Alberisi, Coach Caravana, you know, and Coach Emmer, I learned that, again, as we talked earlier, it's just your efficiency of practice. I mean, your guys, you're only allowed, you know, 20 hours in the week per the NCAA, and you want to make sure that your guys are always active and there's not a lot of standing around and Coach A was, you know, was always, you know, very, very, hard on Mac and I to make sure that our guys weren't standing around, that they were getting in and out of practices. And it's just great, you know, it helped me, you know, as a young coach. And now that, you know, we're running our own program here at Colgate, it's the same thing, you know, that I say to my assistants is I don't want guys standing around. and I want to move in, and I want to, if we can get this thing done in, you know, an hour or 90 minutes or something like that, why wait, why go 120 minutes if you know, if we can, you know, eliminate some of the, you know, downtime or some of the talking that goes on. You know, we can talk in a film session, or, you know, we can talk it out in the office to make sure that we're being, you know, we're being the most efficient for our guys, because their time is precious, and I don't want to keep them out there any longer than we need to, because as I mentioned, I want to be playing great lacrosse, you know, in May, and have gas in the tank, or tread on the tires, however, whatever cliche you want to use. And if you can sacrifice, you know, some time at the front end, you'll reap the benefits on the back end.
And I think the great comments you just made apply mentally as well as physically.
Absolutely. Again, and you
know,
look
I
at...
I think that's an area that you know, coaches, you know, it's kind of funny. I'll finish the podcast, and I'll be talking to a friend of mine, and he'll go, how'd the podcast go with such and such? You know, and you're going, oh, man, I finished it so melancholy because, you know, at the end, I'm thinking, these are great ideas. Why didn't I think of them like 10 years ago? You know, it makes so much sense, you know. I mean, this year, Coach, I know you check out the site occasionally. We got coaches practicing timeout. We got coaches practicing halftime. I mean, stuff that just makes so much sense when you think about it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're going like, you know, my timeouts, you know, if you do the bottle cap play in timeout, we have an article on the site, if you, you know, timeout is too late. You know, I mean, if you haven't practiced it, it's probably not going to work. But at the end of the day, you know, the kids are fresher mentally. But I think the point I want to make is, you know, I think as much as it's so important to be analytical and analyze, you got to understand the kids got full plates, man.
Absolutely.
And in today's world, I think we've had a lot of coaches comment that their plates are actually infinitely fuller than they were when guys from my generation were playing D1, you know.
Yep.
I mean, in terms of, I mean, everything from social media to classwork to relationships to social life to having four parents instead of two. I mean, the whole thing, you know, it's just kind of crazy. Coach, a couple of quick questions for you. Haven't heard anything about 5v5. Over the last year, we've seen more guys running some 5v5. Are you playing around with that concept?
Well, if you remember, our Omaha drill is a 5v5. So, you know,
we do that. That's
we do that once a week, so we do get in the 5-on-5. I guess I've come to the, you know, to the point. It's like, well, if you're 5-on-5, why not just be 6-on-6?
Yeah.
You know, 4-on-4 is different because you're working a segment of your offense.
Yeah, it's part of the whole.
And it was just like, you know, the 5-on-5 again. If you're talking about the efficiency part of it, it's like, well, which player are you taking out, or you know, which player is not important in that drill, and I don't know that you can come, all right, we're going to take an attackman out of the rotation, or you're taking a midfielder out of the rotation. So now you're kind of changing a little bit what you do offensively. And I think for us, again, especially in these last couple of years, it's, you know, we want to have six great offensive players out there, and you want to be able to have those guys working in teams or whatever it is. And the 5-on-5 just kind of gets you, I think, in some odd sets, but you know, you have to practice it because of, again, the transition in the Omaha drill. And I think that's really kind of where we get the 5-on-5. I just, you know, to be quite blunt, I just think, you know, sometimes 5-on-5 can be a waste of time. If why not just go 6-on-6?
Yeah, and obviously these are guys running 5v5, trying to break up the substitution game and take advantage of a matchup or you know, eliminating a guy to sub. I mean, I think everybody, when they come off a face-off, they've got a quick look they want to do, regardless of what it is. And then, you know, they kind of get into the sub game. Now we're seeing guys kind of in the middle of the sub game, you know, design or at least practice, you know, something in a 5v5. For whatever it's worth.
What we do with that, again, to practice the sub game and even to attack is it's, we just do six, there's a 6v5 component for us, whether we're, you know, trying to defend with six against five, or, you know, we're trying to defend with five versus six if you've, you know, in a face off. So I do it in an unsettled situation where there is a numerical disadvantage somewhere. And sometimes, you know, the numerical disadvantage can be you've actually got six, but you've got six guys that might not be as coordinated. Maybe the faceoff guy is caught out there and you're attacking with just five, but in reality, you know, you've got the advantage there. So we'll do that, probably some of those drills that others do in a 5-on-5 in a 6v5 setting, again, to create more of those game-like situations for our guys that we see. Again, this year alone, you know, we got into a situation where, you know, we knew we were going to lose some face-offs, and instead of trying to, you know, sub that guy off, we were just running them off. And we knew we were going to be, you know, 5 versus 6 for a while. So, you know, you spend a good amount of your time, not necessarily in your man down defense, but in that transition for that, you know, those 10 seconds while you're trying to get your face off guy off. And then again, learning how to attack those situations as well as attacking when you've got technically a numerical disadvantage in numbers, but you've got an advantage on the personnel that your opponent has on the field.
Absolutely, man. Great stuff. Hey, let me shift on you one more time. Again, man, last time I talked to you, we talked about the same thing, and this year is even higher. The man up was at 560. I mean,
well, you can talk X's and O's and whatnot, but we had some really good players. You know, and it makes your life a lot easier when you have good players. And I think Cam Williams, you know, became that dominant righty shooter that made it easier for, you know, it loosened some things up for Ryan Walsh, which loosened some things up for Matt Clarkson. And Matt just became, he just really grasped the man down, the man up. He just became a second coach on the field. And the looks that Matt was able to make all year long to our two rookies, you know, on the two low corners, and Anthony Abadesta and Chase Wittick, and then our inside presence with Kevin Adams, you had six guys that were, you know, for lack of a way to put it, they were lethal, you know, because you had two good shooters on the left and the right side. You had a great feeder in the middle who could shoot the ball himself. You had a guy inside that you had to account for, and you had two great finishers in the two young attackmen. So it was kind of like, all right, if you're going to try to take something away, it's going to lessen you, and we've got guys that can, all right, fine, you're going to shut off Walsh. Well, now it's a 5 versus 4, which is creating more angles for us. Clarkson's going to find Abadesta on that low left, or he's going to find Wittick on the low right, or you're slow to rotate, and he gets it over to Williams, who's putting it in the back of the net from that righty shooter side. So again, your percentage goes up with your extra man when you've got six guys that worked as well as our guys did.
You still running that pinch 3-3 there, Coach, kind of?
Yep, absolutely. We usually always finish in it. There's usually some window dressing to set up into it.
Exactly. Good point.
You know, we have some things that you kind of play off of it. That if you don't honor the cutter, we're going to be able to, you know, slip it inside to Kevin, or, you know, we did some things rolling Ryan over the top on some things, getting guys in a different spot in that pinch 3-3. But you know, at the end of the day, you go back to what you're good at.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, Coach, my last area for you is kind of a general observation. Usually don't see much, you know, when I review the stats preparing for the podcast on the goal differentials by period. And it's just looking through some of the individual games, some of the big games actually, as well as the overall stats. Man, you guys just came out strong, seems like, you know, in terms of offensive energy especially. Is that would you attribute that to the practice plan?
Yeah, you try. I mean, I think it's funny, you know, you talk about all the analytics of our game, and, you know, at the end of the day, they're still college kids, and you can look and see what you do and try to mimic it. We just had a good group. You know, we had a good group that I think played the majority of 2015 with the chip on their shoulder. We had some really good offensive players. We played in some interesting weather games where, you know, the weather...
I forgot about that.
You know, the weather turns on you in the second half, you know, and maybe you're holding the ball a little bit more, or you're not able to use your athleticism because you're playing on a snow-covered field. So, I don't know that you can, you know, you can really put your wrap your hand around and said, well, this is the reason. We do try, you know, we want to start fast and finish faster, because I think if you can put your opponent on their heels, you know, you might get them out of what their game plan is. And, you know, we wanted to do that oftentimes. And, again, it was one of those things where you just never knew because of what a big question mark the face-off X was for us all year long. And, you know, you wanted to make sure that you were efficient in everything that you did. So if you got some goals early, you know, maybe you were holding on at the end, you know, I don't know. I don't want to equate it to one thing and take away from the importance of something else. I thought we were, you know, I thought we played really good defense throughout the course of the season. I think down the stretch, you know, we limited teams because of what we were doing, you know, with our zone. At the tail end of it, you know, you play Army and for those that watched the MLL semifinal this last weekend, you know, Johnny Glessner will continue to be a special player. And, you know, we needed to, you know, get into his hands quicker and maybe take Army out of some of their, you know, their weave patterns, and you throw a zone at them and you take them out of what they're comfortable with doing. Maybe you're not as athletic, you know, as a Syracuse, and you got to play zone to slow those guys down and make them thinkers. It's, you know, it's kind of the old adage of why, you know, teams run the option or in football is, well, it's, you take athleticism out of the equation when you're running the option, because you can't pin your ears back and rush the quarterback if he's going to pitch the ball out. So, you know, if you're not as talented on defense as your opponent is on offense, the zone can help you there, and it might limit some teams. You know, it frustrates them, which gives you a chance to have the ball, and you capitalize on those opportunities. So I think it has to do with both. Kind of a long-winded answer to your question is, it is how we practice. You know, we get out there and we practice pretty quickly, and we want to get things done, and that's the way we want to play the game, and we want to be efficient in everything that we do.
Well, we get emails all the time, and I've written a number of articles on it based on, you know, interviews with coaches, but, you know, my team always starts slow, and I'm going, tell me your practice plan. You know, and they do stick work, they do stretching, they do position work, they talk about what day it is, you know, they do a 6-on-6, you know, and they really haven't gotten into an up and down or a pace of practice drill or scenario for 35 or 40 minutes, and then they wonder why the kids play like that.
Yep. And again, a lot of it has to do, again, with, as you mentioned, the way we would practice and some of the drills that we just put our guys in. You know, as I mentioned, our ride clear scrimmage, you may only have the ball for 30 seconds. So you've got to be ready to play and have great attention to detail, because again, you have to be able to play quickly at that moment. Or, you know, if we have a scrimmage, but now we put a 45 second shot clock on you and it starts as soon as your team makes a save. So now you got to clear the ball quickly, and you may only get the ball down and you've got, you know, a limited amount of time, and you got to make subs. Or, as we said, one of the things, you know, I can kind of get a feel for how the team is, or maybe we've had a bad, you know, a long academic day, and you say, all right, you're going to start practice, you know, after your stretch with an overtime scrimmage. You better be able to. And a lot of times with those things is we put, you know, conditioning on the line. You lose that overtime scrimmage, you're doing, you know, 4 or 5 gassers. I'd rather give it all out for those 4 minutes or whatever, as opposed to, you know, being a little sluggish and then have to run for, you know, 10 minutes. It's amazing that the psychological warfare that you can do on your team, and they respond to it really well.
Oh, man, you're awesome. Hey, Coach, I know you prepared for this interview like I prepared for it. Any drills that you have on your sheet that we missed or something you wanted to share?
Well, one of the drills, you know, we talked a lot about the unsettled to the course of our, you know, almost our hour on the call. One of the drills that we do, we put a lot of stress on our defense, is we call it the beast drill. And it's a half-field drill, and it's a 6 versus 4. And what we do is we put all of our offensive players at the top of the formation, probably, you know, somewhere between the middle, let's just say the 45-yard line. So you're inside your half of the field,
right.
And then we have two groups of defensemen. There are four lines, two lines on one side, two lines on the other. The coach drops the ball in, and all six offensive players are attacking from the top of the formation. So the attackmen have to rush in and get to their spots. You know, the middies have got to either slow down to get everybody ahead of them, or those guys got to work at getting ahead of the ball. And those defensemen, it's four versus six, and you better be communicating, and your stick better be up, and you better be ready to rotate as one, and all those things. And, you know, that's one of my favorite drills that we do. It's a drill that I actually stole from Rick Beardsley, who said that they used to do it all the time at Syracuse under Coach Simmons Jr. And again, it's just get your guys playing in that unsettled, kind of not scripted area. And you'll be amazed at how fired up your defense gets for that, because it's like them against the world. And your offensive guys have got to be able to think on their feet quickly, you know, cut through. You would think it would be a shooting gallery with six offensive guys versus four defensive guys. But I'll tell you, there's been more times that Coach Abbott has stopped the drill to be fired up at the offense for not doing the right thing than maybe the defensive coach stops to not be for being fired up, not for the defense. So the beast drill is a drill that we do usually 2 to 3 times a week. We put the scoreboard on, and it's you get 1 point for a stop. You get 2 points for a goal, and we play it for about 8 minutes. And you know, we've had some knockdown, dragout, battles for that, and then the loser's got to do either a suicide or a gasser. And there's some fists flying in that drill.
Man, I love it. I think it'd be a great drill to end practice with.
Yeah, we've done that. We've done that.
Conditioning work in for the shorties.
Does somebody
carry the ball into that drill, or do you roll the ground ball out? How do you start the drill?
We just basically throw the ball up. You know, there's Coach Matt Abbott, who's our volunteer coach, usually has the offensive guys. Coach Mike Abbott, who's our offensive coach, and last year, Stephen Toomey was our defensive coach. They kind of stand in and around the drill. I tend to stand to the side to be able to talk to everybody. Matty flips the ball up in the air to a certain guy, whether it's an attackman or a middie, and we've got to get into our spot. So we don't do it from a ground ball, just because I want the offensive guys to start in kind of a sluggish start to get them to think quickly and get to their spots, you know, immediately on the catch of the ball.
Love it, man. I love it. Sorry, man, I'm writing.
That's okay. And a lot of times what we'll do with that is, you know, we may have a practice where we have, you know, a four-quarter practice where, you know, the first quarter maybe it's a transition drill. The second quarter it's unsettled. The third quarter it's a ride clear component. And then the fourth quarter is a regular scrimmage. And if you, every time, you know, you go through that quarter, at the end of the quarter, you're running. And then at the end of it, you got a quick timeout, and you have a chance to meet with your position coach. Or if we're going into a scrimmage, the offense, the white team will meet with one coach, the maroon team will meet with the other. We'll talk about it real quick. We'll get out, we'll face it off. So again, as you said, we do practice timeouts, you know. Is it an offensive timeout? Is it a defensive timeout? And you do that, you know, in the processes of all your other drills. So you're not just, it has the guys thinking, oh, you know, this is, we're in beast, but all of a sudden, you know, we've called timeout and you got to change your gears a little bit and say, all right, I got to approach this with an open mind. What are we going to do? Are we going into zone? Do we need to have our zone offense ready to go? Are we doubling the ball? Those kind of things. And it's just, again, you're doing a lot of parts to whole, but you're sneaking some different parts into drills where you're keeping your guys on their toes.
Man, I love it. God, I can't believe we've been at it an hour, Coach.
All right. Time flies when you're having fun.
Actually, the timing of this interview is pretty good for the fall Raider lacrosse camps.
Yeah, we're getting back to doing our prospect days and our clinics. And as you know, you and I talked at the start of the podcast, you know, we spend a lot of time in lawn chairs watching games. And I think you and I were talking about it as well at the beginning. I just feel like, you know, the coaching of the game is kind of falling by the wayside. We just sit out there and coach and not able to coach these guys. And we use our prospect days as they're called now, but it's a chance for us to, you know, put 50 young men that may have some interest in Colgate through two Colgate practices, where all the drills that we're talking about, I'm going to bring that to a young man at the high school level and see, you know, how he reacts to those, the shooting drills that we do, whether it's over the cage shooting or soft toss shooting or, you know, the drills that we do footwork wise or our dragon drill and beast and all the drills that we've talked about. Well, it's great when you've got the guys that you've recruited, but sometimes when you've got a young man that's coming from, you know, Atlanta or Arizona to come visit your campus, and you want to see, well, how does he work? How is his, what's his upside? Let's put him in a practice. And that's what we really love to do with our prospect days and why we refer to it as Raider Lacrosse Academy, because you're going to school a little bit and you're going to learn about the game and you're going to learn how to practice at a quick pace. And maybe you'll be able to bring some of these drills back to your own school and whatnot. And then what we've also done is we've started a couple, like a satellite one. I do it down in North Carolina with our friends down there. And then we started one in New Jersey a couple years ago, with a great friend of mine in Tody Calandra at Chatham High School. And it's just, you know, trying to speak Raider language across the country.
Man, I love it. And I, you know, the listeners have heard me say, my frustrations with travel ball, even though, you know, 5 years of my life, I think we were 235 or something. You know, at the end of the day, it's a lot of money, and, you know, you could lose your first game and be on St. Lucie's field for the blind, you know, away from the great coaches. If you have a school you're interested in, you know, these prospect camps are, I think, I my friends will kill me, but a much better use of your money, you know, and being able to learn the coaching staff. I know we've got a lot of new programs here in the South, and we've sent players to those prospect camps, and they've come back saying, yeah, I either love that coach or I would never play for that coach.
And that's,
and that's the beauty of these camps. You learn their culture, you learn their personalities, you learn their style. And I think for guys like me, most importantly, you learn how good the food is on campus. I think that's a big thing.
I think it's, again, as you said, a lot of the underlying, you know, theme of today's conversation with you has been efficiency. And, you know, recruiting is what it is, whether you disagree with it or agree with it at the rate that it's going. If you're a young man, and as you said, you have the ability to get on campus and be around a coaching staff, it's a lot more worth of your time to be around those guys to see if you indeed want to be. And it's a chance to eliminate some schools. It's a chance to, you know, really, you know, find a strong, you know, school that you're interested in. Because, again, you've had a lot of great coaches on your podcast, and what a better way to understand what kind of coaches they are than to spend, you know, 5 or 6 hours with those guys, and as opposed to having them watch you for a half of a half, you know, at a recruiting event or whatnot. It's coming back down to that magical word of efficiency.
Plus, just getting a feel for the campus, man. I mean, I don't want to point out the schools because they're great schools and great coaches and great lacrosse programs. But, I mean, there's a lot of great lacrosse schools out there that have 2,500 students, you know, and right. D1 programs. And I've had guys go to those campuses and come back from the prospect camp saying, Coach, my high school's this big. I think I'd get, you know, it's not my place. I want to be on a big campus. I want to be on a little campus. I want to be in an urban environment. I want to be in a rural environment. I want to be 12 or 15 hours away from home. I want to be 3 hours away from home.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, aside from the lacrosse, you get a feel for the culture of the school, which, you know, I think even as a young man, I tell guys, keep making visits. You're going to walk on someplace. It's going to feel like home. I promise, you know.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And that's kind of what the, you know, my message to the young guys that visit our campus. And, you know, we do them on Sundays, so it allows for, you know, those multi-sport athletes to continue to do that. I think that's another thing that, as coaches, we're trying to reinforce to the kids that, you know, you should be playing other sports. You should be doing some things. And I had a great friend of mine who played at the University of North Carolina. He runs a club team out of Charlotte, and they were up at the Pepper Tournament this weekend, and he brought his team to visit with us on Sunday. And I had so many of the parents say to the coach, you know, the 3 hours that we spent, you know, touring the campus and talking to Coach Murphy, not necessarily just about Colgate, but just about recruiting and schools in general, was much better than the three games that we missed because of, you know, some scheduling snafus on Sunday. And I think to your point, you've got to maximize your time, and sometimes maximizing that time isn't running around on a lacrosse field, it's walking around on a tour.
Well, I tell you what, I was blessed to have a really great relationship with Coach Seaman. Haven't talked to him in a while. But, I mean, when we would play in Baltimore, like at the Crab Invitational, Murph, you know, our kids always had an evening where they would tour the Towson campus. And it was a brief tour. It was a poor man's tour. I mean, not a big tour. But they got to go in the locker rooms. But the cool thing about Coach was the kids that led the tour were freshman lacrosse players at Towson.
Mm-hmm.
And man, the dialogue, then we would end up in the gym just sitting on the bleachers, you know, and the kids could ask those freshman lacrosse players questions about recruiting, about what their anxieties were, about how they made a decision, like peer to peer,
right,
in a totally unpressured situation. And the comment you made before is consistent here too. It was a generic conversation, you know, I mean, it wasn't you know, all about Towson. Actually, it wasn't really about Towson at all, you know. And of course, Coach always picked, you know, great freshmen to be his ambassadors. I mean, you know, kids could walk and chew gum and were great young men, you know. But yeah, that was always came back as, you know, and we tried to come back from the Crab tournament with four wins, and which was an accomplishment for a team from Georgia. But yeah, that was a great, great moment.
Yeah, no, I really appreciated those guys coming in yesterday. And as I said, you know, Steve Shatner has been a great friend of mine for a long time, had a great career at UNC and is doing a great job with his, you know, his group up there and down there in North Carolina. So to be able to spend that time and, you know, ask, you know, answer questions of parents and the kids, not about obviously the Colgate process, but about the process in general, you know, at the end of the day, whether you're a college coach, you're a high school coach, you're a club coach, you're just trying to help these kids, you know, maneuver through life.
Well, and it's an anxiety-laden process. I mean, I can remember crying like a baby one day when my mom came in when I was in high school, you know, when I was trying to decide whether to play lacrosse or play football at App State. And you know, my mom said, "Why are you crying?" And I said, "This decision is so big, I don't know what to do." You know, I mean, I think we forget that at the end of the day, they're kids.
You know, yeah,
and they've got anxieties and feelings and questions and doubts, you know, and they're in a world where they got to demonstrate bravado, you know, and be a big player on the field. But at the end of the day, inside, you know, they're kids, you know.
Yeah, no, and I think that that's ultimately our responsibility. I know, you know, contracts have gotten bigger and pressure to win has gotten, you know, stronger, blah, 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 all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, we're mentors to these young people, and it's our job to help them make their make them the best, you know, versions of themselves that we can, and you know that's our job ultimately when it comes down to it.
No doubt about it, Coach. We're up on an hour, man. I got to say thank you so much. I've got four pages of notes here. I don't even know what I'm going to write about. We'll get something up on the website. Always a blast talking to you, man. I'm so grateful that, you know, you took time out of your summer to spend a day with us. This is really, really cool.
My pleasure.
All right, everybody. Hey, man. Great stuff here. Take it, use it. Make sure you get it documented. Not too soon to work on your practice plans or get your stuff organized, however you do it. You've got a great responsibility influencing the lives of these young people, man. Take it seriously. God bless everybody. Lax Coach Mike, laxcoachmike.com.